You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Vera.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Governor Scott Walker and state lawmakers from both sides of the aisle are calling for investigations into the Wisconsin Veterans Home at King amid allegations of unsanitary conditions and neglect. We'll find out more in our state news roundup.
First, it's Food Friday, and this week we're taking a look at the culinary traditions of the Appalachian region.
It's a region that doesn't always get its fair share of love in this country, but a new cookbook released just last month takes us through the Appalachian region with recipes and stories.
We're joined now by Ronnie Lundy. She's a food author and editor. She has a new cookbook out called Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes. Ronnie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you all so much for having me. And thank you for saying Appalachian and not Appalachian.
I'll say I once worked with somebody from West Virginia who said, if you say Appalachia, we'll throw an Appalachia. And that's how I remember it.
There you go.
I corrected it a long time ago, but I used to say Appalachian.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. Well, and speaking of how we say words, Vittles, spelled V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S. Talk about why we say Vittles.
Well, we say Vittles because that is actually what the word originally was in Old English, and that's the way it was pronounced. And at some point, and I need to look the actual time frame up, but I think it was in the 16th or 15th century, they changed the spelling of the word to make it more Latin.
Huh.
Apparently that was something that was happening. You know how language is a little bit mutable. So they decided to change it, and they spelled it V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S, but continued to pronounce it Vittles. What fascinated me about that is that I grew up hearing the word Vittles used as a joke. You know, you would see it in Little Abner. Mammy Yoakum would say something about come home and eat some Vittles, or Granny Clampett on television would say she was going to cook up some Vittles. And it was thought of as a joke, but when I decided I wanted to name the book Vittles, I looked it up and discovered that, lo and behold, we have been correct all along.
Ah.
That is the way it's pronounced. Pretty cool, huh?
Well, you're actually trying to correct a lot when you look at this book about the way we perceive Appalachian cooking. And it's interesting, along the way, it seems like people thought of it as sort of this dying culture. And you're making the point with this book that no, it's vibrant and rich and deep. But why do you think we have these misperceptions about it, though?
Well, Appalachia is a place that has been written about a lot, and a lot of the time by people who had an agenda for what they wanted the rest of the world to think. A lot of times it was people who were not from the region who wanted to direct how the resources, you know, it's an incredibly resource-rich region, how the resources were taken out and allocated or sold. And there was a mythology created about people who were poor and people who were perhaps not worthy of having these wonderful resources. And then there was sort of a counter mythology, this kind of romantic Appalachian person who continued to live in these very old ways, and they lived tucked up in the hills and didn't have plumbing or electricity. And in that story, people were always old, and it was always dying off, and someone wanted to sort of save the culture. And in fact, we've been living here. The Appalachian Mountains have been occupied by people for millennia, and we have been, there have been Europeans in the region, actually probably since the 1500s when the Spanish first came through. We're starting to understand now that there were Spanish conquistadors who jumped ship and stayed in the region. But certainly it got settled in the 1700s and the 1800s. And it's been a vibrant culture then. It's been evolving. And it's been a part of the larger culture of the United States, while it's still held on to certain characteristics and aspects that make it pretty unique. And I just feel like that's such a wonderful history, and it's so evident in our food ways. And the food here is so delicious. And a lot of it is food that's becoming very popular again, types of preservation methods or preparation methods that have become popular. So I wanted to talk about that.
We're talking to Ronnie Lundy about Appalachian cuisine. She's the author of the new book, Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes. Ronnie, Appalachian region is a pretty big region, covers a lot of ground, probably a lot of different variety, I imagine. Are there some common themes in the food that you're writing about?
Yes. And let me say quickly that the Appalachian mountain range actually is a much larger geographical and geological territory than I talk about in the book. We tend to, when we say Appalachia, we tend to be referring to central southern Appalachia coming down maybe from Pennsylvania, the bottom part of Pennsylvania, but definitely from West Virginia down into North Georgia and Alabama. So that's what the book concentrates on, the southern mountains or the southern central Appalachians. And you are absolutely correct that it covers a lot of cultural territory as well, that there are a lot of different varieties of food, and certainly when you make a generalization about Appalachian food, you can't always do that. What I grew up eating was not necessarily what somebody in northern West Virginia grew up eating, and vice versa. But the region itself is based on what we think of largely as the southern palate, with pork used as a seasoning as well as meat, and with chicken and hunted animals, and with a ton of food from the garden, things that were grown. What distinguishes Appalachian southern mountain cuisine from the rest of the South is that we have a very distinct and fairly long winter. And so we don't get that second growing season that you get deeper in the South. And the Appalachian culture developed a lot of methods of preservation. And there were certain foods like apples, for instance. You know, your friend wasn't just being funny saying he'd throw an apple at you. Apples there were well over 1,000 different varieties of apples in the Appalachian, in the southern Appalachians, because we have winter and we have the kind of climate that favors growing an apple and favors the ripening of an apple. So some of those distinctive things for winter, I like to say that we are the buckle on the hand belt of the United States, because our curing of country hams and also bacon and certain sausages, there's a sock sausage that you make that is not just the kind of sausage that you have for breakfast, but it's hung up in, now it's hung up in a bag, but in the old days it was hung up in a clean sock and put in the smokehouse, so it cured and got that sort of tangy flavor and that smoky flavor. And then we cure a lot of vegetables and fruits that other people don't. We preserve them. We string up whole green beans on thread and hang that up to dry, so we can eat them in the winter. We reconstitute them and cook them with the shell and the bean both, and that's called chef beans or leather breeches. One of the things that's really interesting is that we did a lot of fermenting in the mountains. There's a lot of German foods and German practices in Appalachian foodways. And so when we think about making sauerkraut, where you have cabbage and salt and you put it, you know, you cover it and you put it aside and you let it work and ferment and it becomes really, really tangy. We did that also with green beans, which is a German dish called Sauerbona. And then when the Germans came into Appalachia, they said, well, here's all this corn. Let's try this with corn. So we also make sour corn, which is so delicious, one of the best. One of the most distinctive.
And speaking of corn, you sent us a recipe that involves some corn. It's called John Fleer's Buttermilk Cornbread Soup. A lot going on there. Sounds beautiful. Can you describe that recipe?
Yes. And I'll tell you about the source of it. Of course, we made cornbread almost every day. My mother probably made cornbread 5 days out of the week. And the big meal of the day often happened at dinner time, which was during the daytime, you know, around noon to 2 o'clock. And then at night you would have supper, and supper would be a lighter meal, a lot of times with leftovers. And one of the favorite suppers or breakfasts in Appalachia, or just a snack, was to take a piece of leftover cornbread, and you would crumble it into a tall glass, and then you would pour either sweet milk, which is regular milk, but we called it sweet milk, or buttermilk over it. And then you would eat that with a spoon, kind of like a savory cereal. So John Fleer, who was one of the first chefs to sort of start bringing traditional Appalachian foods and methods to the high table, to the restaurant, the dining table. He now has a fabulous restaurant in Asheville, North Carolina called Rhubarb. And John Fleer looked at that concept. He knew about that concept. He had found amazingly good buttermilk, and he was in East Tennessee at Blackberry Farm at that time, and he had discovered the Cruz family buttermilk, which is quite rich and good and incredibly flavorful. And he decided that he would take this kind of quick snack and turn it into a soup that has a chicken broth base, and you crumble the cornbread very fine into that. You make almost like a velvety puree with it, and you add buttermilk to it, and it's just fabulous.
It sounds delicious. And we've got that recipe, by the way, on the Central Time Facebook page. And we're talking right now with Ronnie Lundy. She's the author of the book Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes, for this week's Food Friday.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about Appalachian cuisine for our guest? Are you from there? Are you from that region? Do you have any favorite recipes? Maybe a family recipe you still make or would like to ask our guest how to make? Have you been cooking these recipes for years? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post and, again, find some recipes on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation about Appalachian cuisine for this week's Food Friday, and we want to get your questions about the culinary tradition of that region. Do you have any experience with the food there, of eating there, or cooking there, or having family there? Tell us about your favorite recipes or what you'd like to cook. Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Ronnie Lundy stays with us. She's a food writer and editor. Her new book is Vittles, spelled like victuals, but that word is pronounced Vittles, we have learned, an Appalachian Journey with Recipes. Ronnie, apple season coming up here in Wisconsin. We love our apples here, too. There was a simple recipe that looked really good for fried apples, which is something I've baked apples, I've grilled apples, I've never fried them. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. And that's another one of those recipes that showed up all the time. So basically what you do is you cut an apple into, you core it, and then you slice it into fairly thin slivers. I'm trying to figure out what that is. Maybe about a quarter of an inch, an eighth of an inch, I would say. Maybe about an eighth of an inch thick. And you melt fat in a heavy skillet. You can use butter or you can use bacon grease, depending upon what you're making with it. And then you drop the apples into that, and you let them soften, and then you add and you turn them so they get coated on either side, and they begin to soften. And then you add some sweetening to that. And when I do this recipe in the book, I talk about I give specific measurements. But I talk about the fact that what you want to do is you want to taste that apple first, because different apples, particularly if you're dealing with heirloom apples, which there are so many more of available these days, different apples have very different flavors. They have very different levels of sweetness. And if you taste it and you can kind of imagine, you can get an idea if that would go better with brown sugar or with honey or maple syrup or the favorite in the Appalachian Mountains, sweet sorghum syrup. And so you add some of that, and you add it to your taste, really. You add enough that it tastes sweet. You know, if you're the cook, you get to stand there and nibble a little bit before everything goes to the table.
Nice.
And so it glazes over, and it's just wonderful with all kinds of foods.
Let's take our first caller now. We've got Martha on the line in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Well, how do y'all, how you doing?
Wow. Martha's in the mood.
Couldn't resist that one. Yeah, pimento cheese spread and real sweet tea and barbecue sandwiches, pork barbecue sandwiches with the coleslaw on the sandwich, not on the side.
Mm, yeah, pimento cheese spread is, I'm a recent convert to that, Martha. I'm with you there. And real sweet tea, too. Do you want to fill us in on the particulars of those, Ronnie?
Absolutely. So, I didn't know that pimento cheese, until I went away from home, I had no idea that pimento cheese was a regional food. I thought everyone ate pimento cheese, and now I think that's starting to be a truth, right? So pimento cheese was, a grated cheese. We used a good cheddar, and you mix it with pimentos. You drain pimentos from a jar, and you chop them up very fine, and you mix that in with them, and then you use really good mayonnaise. There's a lot of discussion about what is really good mayonnaise. There are a lot of people believe that Duke's mayonnaise from the South has no parallel. I happen to grow up in a Hellman's mayonnaise family.
Me too.
Yeah, and, well, you'll be interested to know that Kathleen Purvis, who is a great food writer at the Charlotte Observer, did a blind taste test, and Hellman's actually beat Duke's, and the people who were voting for it were absolutely certain they were voting for Duke's. Use either one of them right now. But anyway, you mix those things together, and then some people, and it's nice to add a little, just a dash of Tabasco sauce to it. Now, it has become very popular to make pimento cheese now with hot peppers, with jalapenos, with habaneros, and I'm kind of a fundamentalist about it. I want my pimento cheese to be just like I described it to you, you know, without a little extra kick. If I want cheese with chili, I'm making chili con queso. That's, you know, that's the deal. And sweet tea is a practical matter. When you make a pot of tea and it's warm and you put the sugar in it right then and you give it a quick stir, it all dissolves. And if you let the tea come to room temperature and you pour it over ice and then you pass the sugar bowl, all you'll hear sitting around the table for like 5 minutes is clink, 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 and it still won't dissolve the sugar. So we always put the sugar in the tea. I don't sweeten mine quite as much. You know that American sweet tooth, and now that you can get it in drive-through restaurants, it's starting to get super sweet tea, you know. I don't sweeten mine quite that much, but that is definitely something that we did.
I want to jump in. Martha, thanks for that call. We're talking to Ronnie Lundy, author of Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes. I want to bring in another caller now. We've got Jackie on the line in Milwaukee. Jackie, hi.
Hi. What I remember from my youth, I grew up in West Virginia, Wheeling, West Virginia, is elderberries. Being used, elderberry pies, elderberry jam, elderberry syrup on buckwheat pancakes.
Yes.
And when I get older, elderberry wine.
Jackie, thanks so much. Yes. So elderberries is a key flavor, Ronnie.
Elderberries. You're saying, yes. You know what's interesting is that my daughter, who lives near me now, we live in the mountains of North Carolina now, where originally from Kentucky, but my daughter has been using elderberry syrup with gelatin to make a type of jello for my grandson, and it has, when he has an infection, like a respiratory sort of infection, it has curing properties, which was another thing that we used. You know, a lot of the berries and the plants in the Appalachian Mountains were used by the people here to cure things, you know, as healing things as well as for foods. And so she has been using it for that as well. It's hard to find elderberries. A lot of the people who forage tend to find them, but they don't tend to sell them because there's not a lot of them. So when you can get your hands on some elderberries, you do, you know, make a pie to celebrate. They're very delicious.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you so much for that call, Jackie. And Ronnie, you sent us another recipe I want to talk just briefly about here, ginger bean chow chow. First of all, what is chow chow?
Well, chow chow is a relish. And this is one of those interesting things about region. Depending upon where you are in the Appalachian Mountains, and then it's also made in other places, people have different definitions for it. You know, some people say chow chow is a very finely chopped relish. Actually, in my family, the chow chow was a relish that had fairly big pieces that you could identify, kind of garden chunks. And it has spices as well as a vinegar and a sweetness in it. It's not just a pickle. It has a spicier flavor. And nobody knows for sure where the term came from. There are all kinds of, you know, it was something that Chinese immigrants did, and they called it chow chow, or it's from a French word or whatever. But really, we don't have an etymology on it. And some people call the relish that they make a pickle lily. My mom actually distinguished a chow chow had those bigger chunks, maybe about as big as your thumbnail in it, and a pickle lily was finely ground.
And Ronnie, we have to leave it there, but I'll point people toward the Central Time Facebook page for that ginger bean chow chow. Thank you, Ronnie, so much for joining us today.
Thank you all so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
It's been fun. That's Ronnie Lundy. We've been talking about her book, Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes.
And you can check out the recipes on our webpage, WPR.org, or the Facebook page. And if you're interested in that cookbook, don't forget, it's Vittles, and spelled V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S. And happy eating and happy cooking.